Hello, I'm Soumya Aryan. I'm the founder of the think tank for women in business and technology and the FemPeak platform, with the mission of raising women's socioeconomic status. When we talk about economic empowerment, people often think about banks and financial institutions. However, one of the biggest sources of financial value generation is the film industry, which acts as a double-edged sword, both impacting our economy and our culture. Our guest today is Kerry Fulton. She is the founder of Evenfield Entertainment, a company that finances and produces films by women with an ambition to balance the popular culture. Did you know that in over 100 years of the history of the Oscars, only one female director has ever won the award? As late as 2020, only 15% of films were written or directed by women, and Kerry talks about what this means for our society and for women's economic and cultural status. She also shares her own experience and the challenges that she faced throughout her career in the film industry. So here's my conversation with Kerry Fulton. So Kerry, thanks for joining me today. You were part of the think tank panel for the first think tank session, and you talked about film industry. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, and then we will take it from there?
We have a problem in the market where only 14% of films are written by women and 17.4% of films are directed by women in America. This creates an imbalance in culture, and these films are exported all around the world. And, you know, you hear these stories. I mean, the most interesting story to me is this whole debacle. I don't know if you've been following it, about the film, the French film, Cuties. Have you heard about this?
No.
So there's a French film which is made by a French Muslim Somalian filmmaker called Cuties. And it was released here on Netflix, and there was a huge backlash against it because it was saying that it was an exploitative film about women. But it's really a story about a young girl in Paris growing up, kind of being bombarded with culture and the conflict between her culture, she's a Somali refugee living in Paris, and her school friends. And, you know, and it's about twerking and dancing. And here in America, everyone was like, oh, you should remove it from the platform, it's terrible. But it's really a story about how far global culturalism reaches and how it impacts these young women. And they're blaming the filmmaker when really they should be blaming the American culture, which is being exported around the world, you know, without any thought, you know. So I think that the fact that once we start to have more films made by women, I think the whole perspective changes. And Evenfield, our high-level mission statement is to balance popular culture. Because when I first started this, I went online and I said, how many films have been made in the world? And like 500,000 came up. And then how many films by women? And it was like 60,000. And I thought, okay, I'm going to call this company 440,000, because that's how many films we have to make to catch up. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And I think also that, you know, that kind of impact, the impact that has on culture in general across every industry is incredible. It, you know, movies teach us what to think, who to be, what to wear, what we should look like. Everything comes from, you know, media. So it's incredibly powerful. So that's kind of what I'm doing.
I'm a filmmaker. I come from, you know, a filmmaking background. I mean, I was a TV producer for 5 years, and now I run my own business, which is a digital marketing agency, but it's mainly focused around film. What I realized, you know, I made a documentary called The Millennial Disruption, which I looked at getting funding to try and build something bigger, make something bigger, and I couldn't get any funding. And I think that it was even more difficult from my experience as a woman of color, you know, woman of a diverse background. What does funding mean when you're talking about in the context of film? What does it mean to raise funds for a film?
I do believe that there's a systematic kind of bias towards financing women. And I be clear, there's funding and there's financing. And to make a film, you need finance, because it's not a small amount of money. It's not like we're spending $5,000 or even $100,000. To make a film that is saleable in the market, you need a couple of million dollars, right? So it's not funding, it's financing. So, you know, I can give you some anecdotes which will help kind of illustrate this. So, for example, very recently I was talking to a friend of mine who, and I was trying to get into Sony, because I used to work for Sony, but most of the people there I don't know anymore. It's been a while, right? And especially since the old guard kind of left. This woman, this friend of mine said, oh, I have a really great friend at Sony. You should talk to him. So I spoke to him. Well, you know, we had an email back and forth, and I told him what I'm doing. And I have a slate of 8 films, and they range in budget from $2 million to $20 million. But, you know, they're all written and directed by women, and some of them are experienced and some of them are first timers. They're all commercial films. And when I say commercial, I mean, they're a genre that will sell. With, you know, one's a horror film, one's a comedy, one's a family film, one's a rom-com, one's like a womance. I call it a womance, like a bromance, but it's a womance about two friends on Wall Street, right? Two Chinese American women. So they're all very commercial, and they're all, you know, highly saleable in a global market, okay? And so he sent me back, and after I sent him my business, you know, just my one sheet for my business, which kind of said what I was doing so that he would be aware of what I was doing. And I sent my slate, and I asked him, you know, I'd like to meet someone in the acquisitions and kind of production development department so I could like talk to them about these different projects and maybe find a partner. So he sent me an email back, and he said, I think this would be good for you. So I went in and I looked, and it was a competition. It was a partnership that had been done between Gina Davis's think tank. Well, it's not, she has a research and development company that called cjane.org, which kind of looks at stats of predominantly women in front of the cameras, but she's doing much more now. You know, women in film and television and advertising, actually. And then, so it's a partnership between her and Sony, and it's a small little studio. And basically, you have to apply to this. It's a competition, and you will win $5,000. Now, when this guy sent me this, I was so insulted. I said to him, I have, you know, 25 plus years in the industry. I've ran television stations. I've worked across the world. I'm, you know, and you're telling me to go and apply to a competition for women for $5,000. I was like, wow. That's one thing. So there's this kind of, everybody, all the men, they kind of think, well, you should apply to this fund where you can get $100,000, or you should apply to, because it's a women's film. They don't see it as a commercial film, although the statistics show that films about women and made by women consistently outperform male films. This CAA, the biggest talent agency in Hollywood, did in 2018 a statistical report where they found out that in every genre, the films by women outperform the males. So it's a viable business proposition. It's not, we're not a grassroots, you know, whatever. And if you, and the other little anecdote you should think about is Wonder Woman. I forget her name, the director of Wonder Woman. She'd been trying to get it up for 10 years. She finally got it up, and they did a one picture deal with her because they didn't trust that the film would be successful because it was a woman, right? So they did one picture deal. Now, in any other film franchise or potential film franchise like that, they would have done a 4 or 3 picture deal with the director because they would anticipate one, then the other, then the next, right? They did one with her, which was actually worked out really good for her.
I'm sure.
They were able to renegotiate. But the lack of trust, you know, they gave her quite a lot of money to make it, but they didn't trust that she would succeed. And, you know, I think that lack of trust is phenomenal. And you know, with regard to financing, you know, it's very difficult to kind of get in the door with women. At the moment, people of color in America are having a pretty good time. They're getting, you know, they're getting in the door, and women, you know, they're starting to look, you know, there's a lot of different companies that have been set up to produce people of color films. So, but still, for women, we're still a minority. You know, we're the biggest minority. We're 52% of the population, but we're the biggest minority.
Yeah.
It's still problematic to get in the door. So my whole thing is, if you have some financing, when you have money, they listen to you. Money talks, it always talks, right? So if you walk in the door with part of the financing, you're much better off than if you have nothing, you see.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a great conversation with a huge black producer who set up a company recently, and I was pitching my slate, and because I have, you know, I have a South Asian director, I have a Muslim director, I have a, you know, a Middle Eastern director, I have a two Chinese women who've written a story. I have all different kinds of stories, right? A big black producer, I had pitched to him, and he said, well, do you have any money? And I was like, not yet, I'm looking for money. And he said, well, we really like you to come when you have money, cast, and distribution. I'm like, well, what do I need you for if I have
That's, you know, really good. Yeah,
you know, it's like,
that was so funny though.
But you constantly get this pushback, you know, you constantly get this pushback as a woman, you know, well, everything in the marketplace, consumer goods, 82% of that is bought, you know, spent by women.
Mm-hmm.
We're the most powerful consumer buying sector in the market, yet we're treated like a niche market.
And
it's interesting in the you know, because the way I'm thinking about my company and how I kind of pigeonhole these films, I'm looking at underserved audiences. So I'm looking at women, which is the largest set, and then I'm looking at like older women. 6 films made a year by people, older people, right? There's just no content for them to watch.
Mm-hmm.
They have, you know, or women like horror films. Of course, women like horror films, of course, but they don't, you know, but they don't have the same kind of characters in them generally, right? You know, or comedy, different kinds of comedy, different kinds of family, different kinds of audiences, whether they're the Asian American audience or the South Asian American audience, you know, different audiences which are completely underserved. I mean, Latinos, I have a Latino project. Latinos, you know, they make up 30% of the population, but, and they also buy 30% of the tickets in cinemas.
Yes.
Them to watch, and Hollywood finds it too hard because, you know, Puerto Ricans aren't the same as Mexicans, who aren't the same as Argentinians, and instead of trying to find a project that kind of speaks to the commonality of the Latino experience, they get bogged down in all these little minutiae which doesn't help the audience. But, you know, I mean, and they think, you know Latinos speak Spanish. Not all Latinos speak Spanish, you know, not all Latinos understand that, those kinds of jokes. It's like I keep saying to people, you know, I married a South American and my kids are half Latino, so I kind of know this market look pretty well. But it's like saying that Scottish people are the same as New Zealand people, or that Americans are the same as English speaking Australians. And we're all different cultures. We're different cultures with different social mores and different ideas. And, you know, we're not all interchangeable. Every industry is a construct, right? It's constructed to work a certain way. So in our industry, for example, there's a whole middleman part to it, which is called the agents,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was only constructed in the 90s with Michael Ovitz, really, when CAA began. But it's a construct, and basically they become the gatekeepers. They're the people who decide what gets made, by whom, how, for how much, right? These people in the middle, they come up in the agency world through, not often through production. So often they don't understand how a film is made. Mm-hmm. They don't generally write, but sometimes they do. Sometimes they do, but generally they're these people in the middle. They're like a car salesman, person between the customer and the seller, right? They're the people in the middle. So, and they determine the statistics, right? So one of the fallacies in the market, you need movie stars to be able to finance and sell a film. There is no data. The only data I found was from 1991, which says there's no correlation between stars guaranteeing ROI, you know, return on investment on a film. There's no data on it.
Okay.
Because it's a construct. It's completely fabricated. But you know, when you're trying to finance a film, they want you to attach stars so they can sell it into a market. It doesn't guarantee that film will make money because those stars are in it.
Yeah.
And those stars cost a certain amount of money. And so that inflates the budget. So the whole thing is constructed to make money for this middle group of people. And recently they've been making, not only representing the talent, but they've been producing the project and then distributing the project. So they take a fee at every level. So they make more money than the writer, than the producer, than the director. It's crazy. It's like the industry has gone mad. It's not very good, I don't think. So, but also, you know, 82% of women consumers buy everything in the market. But in my industry, you know, it's usually the woman who decide what movie you go and see. You know, if you're out on a date with a guy, it's usually the girl who decides. If you're a mother in a family, it's usually the mother who decides. If you're an older person, it's usually the woman who decides. The woman generally decides. And I don't think there's enough women, films about women, by women, out there to kind of support that industry. Women show up to their own films. We show up. We go, like, if there's a film made by a woman, we go. And we go over and over.
So why do you think that films by women have outperformed?
Why do I think? For that reason. So
oh, yeah, okay. So just because people go again and again. I see. Okay, I see.
I think there's so few of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, people show up to them. But also, I think, this comes down to a fundamental thing. I do believe that women are more thorough. They do their homework just by virtue of who we are as a species, as a female species. We behave differently. We are in the same way. There was an article that came out just a couple of weeks ago about all the hedge funds or all the managed funds on Wall Street that had performed during this past year. And they're all run, the successful ones were all run by women.
Yeah, because
I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think you're right. I think people are, you know, they generally do their, because we've been left out of the market so long, we do more homework. Mm-hmm. We work harder to make it better. We try and, you know, get rid of all the risk. You know what I mean? Like we work much, much harder. And I think that's a result of just being left out of the market, you know, as well, as much as it is just our personalities. Yes.
Yeah, I definitely feel that, like, as a woman, I have to work a lot harder to be taken seriously. I have had to always. Even further biases, if you look a certain way, you know, if you have an accent, you know, all of those things have additional impacts. You know, if you wear, so like I've been told on some occasions where even by my own female friends and clients sometimes, you know, maybe it would be better if you don't wear leather trousers, leather leggings, you know, when you're giving a talk. I'm like, why? But why? It just doesn't make any sense. I feel comfortable in them and I feel powerful in them. And a man feels powerful in their suit, you know, so why should that matter?
Never mind older women. Older women are completely invisible. I've encountered this because I've been out trying to raise. I've had some really interesting experiences. I've had experiences like, well, we need to see traction. You need to prove yourself. Okay, so for my 25 plus years amounts to nothing. People have asked me things like, through my career, not just now, but things like, oh, you're applying for this job. What are you going to do with your kids? I've heard that so many times. I can't even tell you through the years. I mean, if I'm here asking you for a job, you don't think I can take care of my home life? Oh, the best one was I met this person who was a fixer. Fixer is a word that's in the market right now because of Michael Cohen. It's a lot of, the person was a fixer for the film industry. And it was right at the beginning of when I was trying to raise. This person sat down with me and asked me what I was doing. And I told her what I was doing with, you know, wanted to make films by women. And she said, well, I work for four different clients and they've all raised between $400 and $500 million for different film companies. I won't tell you any names, but they're all pretty well known. They kind of need to put some money into something to give them a bit of good PR. And I knew the names and some of them were associated with the Me Too movement. So they weren't very good people, right? And so this woman said, so, you know, my client would perhaps be prepared to give you, you know, a certain amount of money, you know, but the branding will have to be with them. And I was like, are you kidding me? First of all, these people who've been sexually abusing people in the industry for a while. And secondly, you want me to be their publicity machine and to make everything all right because we're making films by women? I was like, no. But it's really interesting. Some women have said to me, you should have taken the money. I'm like, that defeats my whole purpose. Do you know what I mean? It makes no sense to me.
You talked about the middlemen. Do you think technology could make it possible to get around that middleman situation?
I think data, because there's a disconnect between the filmmakers and the financiers, the money people, right? There's a disconnect. I mean, it was amazing to me when I was in business school. Just about every professor in business school said, you know, at some point the film industry came out as a bad investment. It's one of the largest, you know, industries in the world. But there's a perception that you lose money in the film industry, which is not true. But we need more data, I think, to show that, and there's not enough data. People aren't transparent with their budgets. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that, right? You've probably heard of Hollywood accounting. Hollywood accounting, it means, you know, Hollywood or, you know, certain producers, not really producers, more the companies, the distribution companies, and or people who are financing within Hollywood, take fees on just about every level. So in a normal kind of accounting system, it wouldn't be okay. You know, I think Hollywood cheats a lot. And by virtue of, by me saying that, what I'm saying is that the men who run Hollywood are a little bit crooked because, right? So, but there was, in business school, I was like, what do you mean the film industry is not lucrative as an investment vehicle? People have made money in films. And I looked at the stats, and, you know, there's a huge investment in technology, right? And I looked at the fail rate. So in technology, because I got very involved in kind of the tech part of when I was in business school, and you know, there's a 75% fail rate in technology. People investing, so 75% of products that they invest in fail, right? It's 80 in film. So it's more or less the same. But what you get when you invest in a film is you get a piece of IP that has a library value and grows. With technology, it just gets thrown in the basket. In the basket, you don't get anything with it. So it's actually a safer bet. You know, there's all these perceptions in the market of how things are, and I think it has a lot to do with the lack of transparency for accounting in by filmmakers. Like I said, trying to get business plans to get a sense of numbers and to be able to compare. While I was putting my business plan together was really difficult. And I had a very corporate straight guy helping me. And I wanted him to look at business plans and tell me the holes he saw. Like, look at this and tell me what you think. And more often than not, really big companies I got some business plans for. He said, this is rubbish. It's not, you know, like this layers of cheating going on here. I wouldn't invest in this. An accountant can see the lines. They understand it. You know, business plans or financial models show a plan, show a story in the same way that a film script shows a story. So, you know, I mean, you can't cheat someone who understands the story of numbers, right? Yeah. So yes, technology can help in lots of different ways. I think there needs to be a lot more transparency in data. Distribution data, you know, financing data, data around, you know, I mean, there's a lot of bias in the industry, just, you know, the way films are distributed, how much is spent on marketing and publicity, who's reviewing the films?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's like 20% of film reviewers are women. So if men are the ones who are saying the film is good, of course, that's a problem. Like every level through the chain is biased against women. So, you know, I think all of these things need to be brought together to tell a bigger story and you know, a huge part of it. And also for the investors, for the financiers, the independent, or the, you know, like VCs or, you know, equity partners, whoever they are, the more transparent we can be, I think they will understand what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be incredibly viable, but, you know, there's a budget cutoff, right? It's like the data that I found that films under $5 million are more likely to recoup. Not always, there's always flops, but more likely to recoup completely, right, with a premium. So you need to keep your budgets down, but you look at Hollywood and you look at $100 million films, those films don't make money. They just don't. They make money in other ways. They build branding for a company or for the actual company, or merchandising or theme parks. You know, there's all kinds of ancillary businesses where they make money. But the films themselves at that budget level don't generally recoup because they spend too much on marketing, they spend too much on talent, they spend, you know, so there's all kinds of stories that can be told. But, you know, there's people who have vested interests in all these layers, you see, so it's hard to get all the data in one place.
How would you say that we could go about getting women educated about investing in film? And especially because this is all female oriented as well, right? Why should they consider investing in films?
Within a certain budget level, and as long as it's commercial and not a, you know, I mean, there are certain kinds of films that just don't make money. I mean, but there are ways and there's information out there. You know, the market works in certain ways. People go and see certain films. It's been like that for a while, right? So as long as they're good stories, well told and wrapped in a genre, you're kind of okay, right? But I think in terms of investing in films, I think there's a stigma around it that needs to be broken down. It's like women, it's the antithesis of women investing. You know, there's these new companies, I think it's called Alivest. Do you know Alivest? It's a company in New York that started, it's started by a woman, I forget her name, but basically she set up an investment fund for women, and it addresses all the different kinds of issues around how women invest, why they invest, you know, so, but it's specifically targeted to women. But, and it's more about, and the idea of it was to get more and more women to invest, right? And the reason for that is that women traditionally, because they're more risk averse, don't invest. But I think if you show them a plan and show them how, I mean, like in my business plan, there's a slate of films. And the idea is if you make this many films, it's like investing in a stock portfolio. If you invest in this many films, a part of the money, if three of them work, we're making money. Mm-hmm. If 10 of them work, we're mega rich. So it's about offsetting risk. It's about looking at, you know, you've got to look at the business plan and understand why. There's many ways to skin a rat, right? Or skin a cat or whatever the word is, I forget. I think it's about educating and people understand the way investing happens generally. Like I said, you know, you go to business school, you learn the best way to invest is to diversify across different sectors over a long period of time. Do it with film, do it in the same way. Why not? I mean, that strategies work, right? So what we've done is applied it to our business plan, right? We're looking at making 15 films over a 3-year period, and in a 5-year plan, you know, by year 3, we're already revenue positive. You know, if you do the numbers and you make the plan, it works. It's a matter of just figuring all these things out and looking at strategies that have already worked in the market, that people, and talking in a way that people understand. You know, when I tell people that 75% of tech companies fail and 80% of films fail, they thought it was much bigger, the fail rate in film. You know, they had the sense that, but it's not the same as tech, but so much more money is spent on tech. And so many more companies fail. The thing about film is that culture needs stories. We need stories. We need stories to sustain us, to tell us about who we are and what we want. So there's a much greater value in telling stories than there is in building software. How it is.
Yeah. I think we could argue that we need both, but as humans, we definitely need stories. This is a great place to end it. Before we go though, is there anything else that you think we should tell people listening to this about investing in films, and also about why we need to have more women in film, how to even start, and you know, why to think about it?
Yes, we need more women taking over the role of being cultural ambassadors, right? I think that's really important. We are 52% of the population, and our stories are as valuable and as important as the male sector. I mean, I don't think we would have a lot of the issues in the world that we have now if it was more balanced, whether it's politics or storytelling or whatever it is. You know, I mean, I think if gender equality was a bigger issue and a requirement in every kind of industry, I think the world would be better, because you need two sides.
Yes, yin and yang, right?
Yes,
definitely. Our world has become very imbalanced. Thank you so much, Carrie. That was really helpful, really amazing. And I hope that our audiences find it as helpful as I did.
All right. Well, you have a lovely day, and thank you for having me on.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Carrie Fulton. Here's to a day when we see more female directors gain the necessary backing and recognition for their art and reach the heights that they deserve. Speaking of heights, let's bring this podcast to an end by remembering another awesome woman, Junko Tabei. She was a mountaineer who broke the gender norms in the 1970s when she became the first woman to successfully climb Mount Everest. She was also the first woman to reach the seven peaks, the highest points of the Earth's seven continents. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, and connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Instagram.